My dear Lord, O Supreme Unborn, I know that the different varieties of living entities, such as animals, trees, birds, reptiles, demigods, and human beings, are spread throughout the universe, which is caused by the total material energy, and I know that they are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest, but I have never experienced the supreme form I behold as I see you now. Now all kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he has spread himself throughout the universe, but although everything is resting in him, he is aloof. The same concept is expressed here by Dhruva Maharaj. He states that before seeing the transcendental form of the Lord, he had experienced only the varieties of material forms, which are counted at 8,400,000 species of aquatics, birds, beasts, etc. The fact is that unless one engages in the devotional service of the Lord, it is impossible to understand the ultimate form of the Lord. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 18:55. Bhaktya mam abhijananti, factual understanding of the absolute truth, who is the supreme person, cannot be obtained by any process other than devotional service. Dhruva Maharaj here compares his previous state of understanding with the perfection of understanding in the presence of the Supreme Lord. The position of a living entity is to render service. Unless he comes to the stage of appreciating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he engages in the service of the various forms of trees, reptiles, animals, men, demigods, etc. One can experience that one man engages in the service of a dog, another serves plants and creepers, another to the demigods, and another humanity or his boss in the office. But no one is engaged in the service of Krishna. Aside from common men, even men who are elevated in terms of spiritual understanding are at the utmost engaged in the service of the Virat Rupa, or unable to understand the ultimate form of the Lord. They worship voidism by meditation. Dhruva Maharaj, however, had been blessed by the Supreme Lord. When the Lord touched his conch shell to Dhruva's forehead, real knowledge was revealed from within, and Dhruva could understand the Lord's transcendental form. Dhruva Maharaj here admits that not only was he ignorant, but by years he was only a child. It would not have been possible for an ignorant child to appreciate the supreme form of the Lord had he not been blessed by the Lord who had touched his conch shell to Dhruva's forehead. Tiryan naga dvija sarishripa deva daitya martyaribi parichitam sarasad vishesham rupam stavishtam ajate mahad adyanekam nata parang parama bedmi nayatravara. My dear Lord, O Supreme Unborn, I know that the different varieties of living entities, such as animals, trees, birds, reptiles, demigods, and human beings are spread throughout the universe, which is caused by the total material energy. And I know that they are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest, but I have never experienced the supreme form I behold as I see you now. Now all kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. So this verse, because I didn't look at it before the class, so it very much reminds me of these programs I've been making in the last days on reincarnation. Because to understand reincarnation, one has to understand all the points given in this verse. That, first of all living entities are spiritual beings by their own inner nature. They are spread throughout the whole universe in various species, such as those mentioned here. Tiryak, Naga, Dvija, Sarishpa, Deva, Daitya, Martya, Aribi. Animals, trees, birds, reptiles, demigods, demons, men, and so on. And these forms are Sarasad Vishesham. Sometimes they're manifest, sometimes they're unmanifest. And the soul is, of course, or the souls of this universe are wandering up and down these various divisions of consciousness, 8,400,000 divisions of consciousness, which are occupied by various species. And as stated here, sadasad vishesham, sometimes you see these manifested living entities. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not there. All of these points have to be understood in order to know what is reincarnation. These questions, which are answered very nicely by this verse, always come up. People ask, well, if the soul is evolving up the evolutionary plane of living entities, what about the living entities who have disappeared from the earth? For instance, the dinosaurs. Everything okay? We'll let everyone get themselves together. The dinosaurs and other creatures are no longer visible before us. So they ask, what about this? Well, that's answered here. Sadasad vishesham. Sometimes they are manifested, sometimes not. But still, those gradations of living entities, 8,400,000 species, they are always part of the plan. At least they're always part of the plan of this cosmic manifestation. So we may see the plan in its totality, or only part of it, or hardly any of it at all, due to our ignorance or knowledge. We may have a little knowledge, we'll see more. If we're more ignorant, we'll see less. But that plan is always there. That is the Virat Rupam, the universal form of Krishna. So, what's also interesting about this verse is Dhruva Maharaj is saying, by seeing Krishna himself in his transcendental form, standing before, now he understands the complete form, the complete plan of the Lord. Dhruva says he was already familiar with the total material energy. This means, of course, that Dhruva Maharaj, although he was a 5-year-old boy, he was certainly not an ordinary personality. Otherwise, how could he say that? That he's saying very clearly, I'm already familiar with the whole universe and all the living entities spread all over it. So now, seeing Krishna, he has become full in knowledge. So that also reminds me of when we have to present this theme of reincarnation. Actually, we as devotees of Krishna are not really interested in reincarnation. We don't want to reincarnate. That's why we took to Krishna consciousness. If people ask, do you believe in reincarnation? Our answer should be no. We don't. We don't believe that we should reincarnate. It should stop. So, actually, we're not really interested in this subject matter. But it is of interest to the materialistic persons, because of course it's a problem for them, reincarnation. It's a great mystery. They are trying to understand. So the whole point of preaching on such a subject as this is just to bring them up gradually to the point of seeing that there is a supreme plan maker behind the great plan of this universe. And that plan maker is Krishna. So this is the way of knowledge, of real knowledge, development of real knowledge, as Srila Prabhupada very clearly points out in the purport, that we have to come to this point of full knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to become perfect beings. And also it goes on to say, and this process of developing knowledge is done through devotional service. Bhakti mam abhijananti yavinyash chasmi tatvatah tomam tato gyatva vishitav taranantaram. Krishna says, you can only enter the supreme transcendental atmosphere, the kingdom of God, the transcendental realm of Krishna. You can only come to that platform of spiritual understanding through devotional service. There is no other way. So, this whole Krishna consciousness process, therefore, it actually means to develop one's intelligence more and more and more. That is the measurement. Just like when one runs a race or whatever, there's a measurement to see how one is doing. There's distance, there's time. Like in the Olympics, they run races. So they estimate who's the best runner, of course, by using measurement of time and distance. So the measurement of success or failure in the Krishna consciousness process, it's a measure of intelligence. Of course, this does not mean mundane intelligence. Intelligence for exploiting the material energy. But actually, it means intelligence as explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, or in the Vedic literatures are full of such references. Intelligence begins with just knowing clearly that I am not the body. Sri Yasupanishad, that mantra explains, Yasmin Savani Bhutani Atmaiva Bhut Vijanataha. So, Yasmin Savani Bhutani. To see Sarva Bhutani, all living entities, as Atmaiva Bhut, they are actually spirit souls. Everywhere. All living entities are actually spiritual beings. They're not the body. So, Atmaiva Bhut Vijanataha. This requires Vijnana, intelligence. So it's vijnana or intelligence or buddhi. Buddhi. This is the thing which can separate the soul from the actions and reactions of karma, the influence of illusion, absorption in sensual activities, this fallen condition of mundane existence is counteracted by this higher intelligence. It's intelligence which lifts us up out of this miserable condition of material life. That's why the Upanishad, so many Vedic statements are there. Come out of the darkness into the light. Tamasi Jyotirmagama. Yes, come to the point of knowledge. And if you come to the point of knowledge, then tatrako moha kasoka ekadvamanupashita, then there's no more lamentation. No more hankering for sense gratification. One's senses are under control, the mind is... Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of Godhead. Purport. The sufferings of human society are due to a polluted aim of life, namely, lording it over the material resources. The more human society engages in the exploitation of undeveloped material resources for sense gratification, the more it will be entrapped by the illusory material energy of the Lord, and thus the distress of the world will be intensified instead of diminished. The human necessities of life are fully supplied by the Lord in the shape of food, grains, milk, fruit, wood, stone, sugar, silk, jewels, cotton, salt, water, vegetables, etc., in sufficient quantity to feed and care for the human race of the world, as well as the living beings on each and every planet within the universe. The supply source is complete, and only a little energy by the human being is required to get his necessities into the proper channel. There is no need of machines and tools or huge steel plants for artificially creating comforts of life. Life is never made comfortable by artificial needs, but by plain living and high thinking. The highest perfectional thinking for human society is suggested here by Shukdev Goswami, namely sufficiently hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. For men in this age of Kali, when they have lost the perfect vision of life, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the torchlight by which to see the real path. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has commented on the Kathamritam mentioned in this verse and has indicated Srimad Bhagavatam to be the nectarian message of the personality of Godhead. By sufficient hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, the polluted aim of life, namely lording it over matter, will subside, and the people in general in all parts of the world will be able to live a peaceful life of knowledge and bliss. For a pure devotee of the Lord, any topics in relation with his name, fame, quality, entourage, etc., are all pleasing. And because such topics have been approved by the great devotees like Narada, Hanuman, Nanda Maharaj, and other inhabitants of Vrindavan, certainly such messages are transcendental and pleasing to the heart and soul. And by the constant hearing of the messages of Bhagavad Gita, and later of Srimad Bhagavatam, one is assured herein by Srila Shukadev Goswami that he will reach the personality of Godhead and render him transcendental loving service in the spiritual planet of the name Goloka Vrindavan, which resembles a huge lotus flower. Thus, by the process of bhakti yoga, directly accepted as suggested in this verse by sufficient hearing of the transcendental message of the Lord, the material contamination is directly eliminated without one's attempting to contemplate the impersonal virat conception of the Lord. And by practicing bhakti yoga, if the performer is not purified from the material contamination, he must be a pseudo-devotee. For such an imposture, there is no remedy for being freed from material entanglement. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, second chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Lord in the Heart. Pivanti ye bhagavata atmana shatam katamritam shravanaputeshu samvritam punanti te vishaya vidushita sayam brajanti tacharana sarohantikam. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life, known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of Godhead. So this is one of the more famous, of course all verses in Srimad Bhagavatam are famous in their own right, because the Bhagavatam itself is the most famous shastra. But of the verses, this verse, which describes the nectarian hearing process, which purifies the heart of all sinful desires, this is one significant verse. So much is significance in this verse, so we can only go over a few points. So here there is the expression vidushita ashayam, polluted aim of life. So that is material life, polluted. This means the actual potency of the spirit soul, his natural right, or you could say natural, can't say birthright because the soul is not born. But anyway, the right of his natural existence, this potency to manifest transcendental activity and experience bliss and knowledge and experience his eternal life, that potency is withdrawn, or it is covered by this vidushita ashayam, this polluted aim of life. In Bhagavad Gita also, avritam jnanam etena jnaninas nitya vairanam kama rupena kaunteya dushpurnana lenacha. One very important verse in Bhagavad Gita is explaining the same point. Avritam jnanam etena jnaninas nitya vairanam. So, in this verse, the soul, he is named by Krishna Jnani. Jnani means the knower. So the soul is full of knowledge by his own natural condition. He's the knower. And what is he the knower of? Well, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Jnanam Jnayam Gamyam, that is, I who am to be known. I am knowledge. And Krishna is also the knower. He is also the ultimate jnani, the ultimate knower, because he, as he says, I know all living entities. But the individual living being is a tiny fragment of Krishna. He's also an atomic aspect of Krishna. So knowledge is there. But he is meant to know Krishna, and thus his knowledge becomes complete. But when that knowledge is turned away from Krishna, that potency to know, when it's turned away from Krishna, then avritam jnanam etena, then it becomes covered by what? Kama rupena kaunteya. It becomes covered by lust, which is nitya vairanam, the eternal enemy. The eternal enemy of the soul, lust, is the enemy of the soul. The soul is, of course, we've explained this the other few days ago, how, and also in the Sunday lecture I made this point that we are all idealists. We all have some conception of perfection that we're all working for, all living beings. It's visible everywhere in human society. Every human being is an idealist. He wants the real thing, so to speak. This is a funny contradiction if you explain it in this way. We want the real thing. We want real love, we want real truth, we want real beauty. This is what we want. But because these things don't exist in the material world, therefore they're called ideals. You see, there is a kind of opposition when you say ideal and real. These two words, they're like opposites. Not exactly, but it has come to be understood that commonly. Some people say, I'm an idealist, and other people say, I'm a realist. And these things are said to be in opposition. So it's very interesting that because we desire so much the real thing, in this world, that desire is called idealism. Because this world is false. You see, so just by this logical point, you can actually speak with anyone how this is the world of Maya. It is a false place. We desire the real thing, but what we get is Coca-Cola. That's the motto for Coca-Cola. It's the real thing. Oh, you want to here, drink some Coca-Cola. This is what you get for your idealism. So, yes, the soul becomes covered by its eternal enemy. And that is this illusion born of lust. So Nityavaranam, the eternal enemy of the soul. Thus we stay, birth after birth, in this world of illusion, accepting falsehood for reality, and thus always being frustrated. So I can also just mention, Avinash Chandra and I were having a discussion the other morning about the soul as the doer. This is one philosophical point, doer or non-doer. So both things are there in Vaishnava understanding. It is often, you find in Srila Prabhupada's books also, often it is said the soul is the non-doer, especially with respect to material activities. And this point can be understood when we take into consideration, because it is a difficult point to understand. At least Avinash Chandra Prabhu was saying, how many devotees speculate, am I doing it now or am I not? So the point is if we look at this phrase here, vidushita ashayam, polluted aim of life. You see, Prabhupada gives an example, which clarifies this. As I was saying, there's the real thing, and then there's the false thing. So Prabhupada gave the example of real activity, or real doing. He compared it to cooking. Just like cooking, you go in the kitchen and you cook, and that's activity, and there's a result. Now, someone who doesn't know how to cook, like a little child, but wants to imitate, but without proper knowledge, then Prabhupada said the mother may give that child a little stove, little pots and pans, and then the child sits in the sandbox and cooks. Usually takes some dirt and makes it into a little torta or something. And so, in one sense, the child is doing something. Because this is the point. The soul is eternally active. In the material atmosphere or the spiritual atmosphere, the soul must act. The soul must do something. But is that really doing? You see, just like, is that really cooking? Prabhupada gave that example to explain this point. It's an imitation. It's not the real thing. So it's not real doing. You see, because Chaitanya Charitamrita very wonderfully explains this point, that real doing is devotional service. It says there, Krishna Bhakti Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. Krishna Bhakti, devotional service to Krishna, Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. So Sarva Karma means all activities, or everything, accomplishing everything that is possible to be done. Sarva Karma Krita. So, it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that by serving Krishna, one is really doing, or one is doing everything. One is, in other words, one is actually accomplishing everything by serving Krishna. And as we said yesterday, we quoted another verse from Bhagavatam where it says, and if you have not developed an attachment to Krishna through the hearing process, you may be doing in this world something, even dharma, even you're following the Vedic process, but if there's no genuine attraction to Krishna, then shramahi eva kevalam, you're just wasting your time. That's not really doing, that's not really accomplishing. So this is one way to understand. Of course, this is a very complex subject matter, this point of the soul is doer, non-doer, and there are many other ways to look at it and talk about it. But just, it came to my mind in the light of this expression, vidushita ashayam, polluted aim of life. One is diverted by one's lust. And then one is actually not doing anything except wasting time. The soul is, of course, it is active. The active nature is there, but everything is just a big waste of time. There's no use to it. No use to it. So there's no satisfaction. Like it says, na sukham, na siddhim, in Bhagavad Gita, na param gatim. There's no sukha, there's no happiness, no siddhi, no perfection, na param gatim, and you do not attain the ultimate goal. One is just aimlessly thrashing in this material world, just going, stumbling, like running through a jungle at night with no light, not knowing where he's going, bumping into something, falling over something, getting entangled in all kinds of branches and leaves. And so many crazy, bizarre situations are there. And there's no end to it, just running aimlessly, foolishly, going deeper and deeper into the material complication, material contamination. So, we have to do something, that's a fact. The tendency to do is there. But if we are following this vidushita ashayam, this polluted aim of life, then these senses, we require these senses we have, senses of this body, in order to manifest the acting propensity. So if we follow this polluted aim of life, then these senses, they react in such a way to simply drag us down into a hellish condition. Like we have these eyes. So these eyes allow us, the soul, some facility to see. It's very limited because we're not in our natural condition. But some knowledge through the eyes is available. So, if one uses these eyes to see Krishna, that's the perfection. That is liberating. These are, as we said from Bhagavad Gita, as it is explained there, regulative principles of freedom. By using the eyes to see Krishna, one becomes delivered from this material world. That's proper use. But if we don't use the eyes to see Krishna, we look at lusty things, then we become very much attached to these eyes, on the one side, because that is actually That is what happens. As soon as you engage in sense gratification, using the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, these senses, in material enjoyment, then immediately you become attached. That is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. Sangateshu Bhajayate. So, attachment is there. We become, and then, after having become very much absorbed and attached in, for instance, these eyes, we've learned to relish seeing lust-provoking scenes, lust-provoking forms. Then these eyes, they turn to poison. Just like with time, one becomes very much attached to the eyes, but with time, the eyes go dim. As age progresses, then we start to lose our vision. We start to lose our hearing. Just like there's this kind of music that young people listen to, some young people, called head-banging music. And they wear their Walkman and you see them banging their head like this. So they grow attached to hearing this music, but in the future, the ears will grow dim. The ears will lose their power. And then these sounds that we've become so attached to, these mundane sounds, you cannot hear them. And then, of course, the mind is very disturbed. I want to enjoy these things, but it is no longer available. So it is like the story of Tantalus. There is a Greek story of a personality named Tantalus. And his punishment was, he was placed in a pool. He was thrown into a pool of water. And above the water there was hanging some vines with grapes hanging down. So he was in this pool of water. But whenever he would try to drink the water, immediately the water would evaporate. Just before his tongue would come to the water, the pool would just and it was gone. And whenever he would try to reach the grapes, they would go up, out of his reach. They would be hanging down right in front of his face. But as soon as he would try to bite them, gone. So in this way he was spending his time. The water is all around like this, but as soon as he tries to drink it, it's gone. The grapes are hanging right in front of his nose. As soon as he tries to eat them, gone. So from this name Tantalus has come in English language anyway, the word tantalize, which means you attract someone, attract them, tantalize them. But you don't get anything out of it. Just like in social life, women, they do this to men. They tantalize them. They glance at them and smile. And then the men become very attracted and thinking, oh yes, now she's mine. And then he's going up to her and thinking she likes him so much. And then she smiles and says, I'm a little short of money. I need some money right now to do something. Do something. Oh, sure. And he gives him money. Thank you. Goodbye. She's gone. And then it left there. Like this. So this is tantalize. Attracting, but there is no result. There is actually no fulfillment, no end. And that's what happens in this body. Our senses become tantalized in our young age, and we become attached. There is the promise of sense gratification. We engage our senses and we start to enjoy. Of course, by that enjoyment, you never actually satisfy the desire. But one thinks, I just keep on enjoying and somewhere in the future I will finally satisfy. That's why they become more and more entangled or more and more involve themselves in the complexities of material nature. They start off as teenagers and they're just trying out all the enjoyments, and they think, it's nice, but it's not enough. I have to get more into it. I need more money, so got to get a job, got to get a wife, got to get a house, got to get a car, got to get this, got to get kids, got to get that. You see, they think, yes, it's nice, I'm enjoying something, but it's not enough, so I got to get more, got to get more, got to get more. So this is actually simply tantalizing the senses. It's not really fulfilling them. It's just stimulating them more and more. And then after one gets good and entangled, then the senses start to lose their power to enjoy. So one has built up all of this. It's karma, you see. This is karma. This is what karma means, activity. And this activity has a momentum, like a snowball rolling down a hill. You start it off, it rolls, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you can't stop it. So that's what happens. By the time one reaches 30, 40 years old, and he's already gone so far down the path of sense gratification, he can't stop. There's the expression, you can't teach a new dog, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Once you become an old dog, you only know the tricks you learned. When you were young, you can't learn anything new. So one becomes very much attached to the sense gratification and wants to have it, wants to have more, wants to increase it. But then the senses, they lose their power to enjoy. And so one becomes very frustrated. And then Prabhupada used to say, look in this Western world, you see the old men. He used to talk about this in Paris. He saw some clubs where there's, as Prabhupada would say, naked dance. Naked dancing is going on. So then old men, very old men, 70 years old, they're going, spending their money to go in and see this. But they cannot really enjoy it. They're old men. They can probably hardly see. But still, because of the momentum of karma, it's built up, they can't stop it. And now their senses are useless to even enjoy it, but they're still being pushed. It's so frustrating existence. So actually what this does, this whole process, it simply increases more and more the unfulfilled lust in the heart. The lust is blazing more and more as one gets older. This is principle, tantalizing. As one gets older, the senses become more incapable of enjoying, but still the contemplation, the attachment is there. So it's increasing more and more and more. So at the time of death, then mind becomes fixed like that, only on lusty thoughts. And then one is dragged down by material nature. So, hearing about Krishna, that is the real thing. That's the beginning of real life. Because, as explained here, katha amritam. This Krishna katha, it is amritam. It is real nectar. Real nectar which will satisfy these raging desires, these agitated senses, the heart blazing with lust, the mind which is running back and forth like a monkey in a cage. All of these agitations, they will be satisfied by hearing about Krishna. Because that is the ideal, or shall we say, that is actually the reality that we're looking for, that we cannot find in this material world. We're simply on the wrong path, trying to satisfy our desires with dead matter. No, we are spirit, we are pure spirit soul, we are meant for serving Krishna. So one must return to Krishna. And one returns to Krishna through the hearing process. So, actually, our desire, you see, is to enjoy. That is our desire, to have fun, to play. Nobody really wants to work in this world. Work hard, slaving. Nobody really likes that. So Krishna is always enjoying. That's Krishna's nature. Krishna is always engaged in wonderful, blissful, playful activities. And he appears in this world simply to display these activities for our benefit. And then these activities are written down. They're compiled in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic Shastras. So that we can study the pastimes, enter into them in our consciousness, and become so purified that we can realize them in the heart. So, yes, we want to play, we want to have fun, that is everyone's desire. I was hearing someone, some man was saying a few days ago that he's in his 40s now. And he was saying, I still, in my heart, in my mind, I still have all the desires of an 18-year-old. I still want to just have fun, just fool around. I still feel like an 18-year-old, but now I feel like a tired 18-year-old. So these desires are always there. Yes, but we become, that's the point, we become tired. We try, in this material world, we're trying to have fun, we're trying to enjoy, trying to have lila, and we just become tired. The senses, the material senses become exhausted. Time is passing. The body is decaying. This is the result. So Krishna, he comes to this world to show us what real fun is. That's actually his whole purpose for coming. Actually, Krishna, he's Navayovana, he's an eternally young boy. That's the wonderful revelation of God. What is God that we find in Srimad Bhagavatam? That God, that exalted being who millions are worshipping in churches and mosques and synagogues and temples all around the world, that exalted mysterious being, and they're crying out, Allahu Akbar, God is great, and all these various mantras. And this great God, he's actually a young boy. And he has the psychology of a young boy. Just like I was in Hungary some weeks ago with Kirti Raj Prabhu and his family. We were meeting some devotees from the eastern countries. So Kirti Raj's son, Radhanath, he's about 8 years old. So I was watching him playing and I was seeing the psychology of a boy of that age. So, of course, as a devotee, Radhanath believes he is living a simple life. It's not like the boys in the Karmi society whose parents shower them with all kinds of sense gratification, all kinds of toys and little robots and toy machine guns and airplanes and all these things. But as a devotee, Radhanath, has to use his mind in order to play. This is actually very good, you see. For a young child, not to have so much in the way of playthings. Because then he uses his mind, and this is exercise for the brain. So I was watching how Radhanath, he was going to some plants in the garden that were bearing some seeds, flower seeds. So he was picking the seeds off the plant and making a big handful of seeds, and then he went to one chair which was put outside. We were staying in one camping place, so anyway. So out on the grass there was one chair. So then he piled the seeds very carefully in the chair. And then he took a rope and he tied it around the back of the chair. And then he was leading, you know, the rope, stretching the rope around the side of the house. And then he was standing on the side of the house. And he was looking around where the chair was. And then he would pull it a little bit. And then he would look back. Then he would look again. So I was watching this. And he was obviously having a very nice fantasy. I don't know what it was. I didn't quite understand what he was doing, but he was obviously very absorbed in some fantasy. But I was thinking, that evening I gave the Bhagavad Gita class, and I was pointing out that psychology that one sees in this material world in young boys, it is there in unlimited expanse in Krishna. Krishna has the same psychology, but unlimited. Just like when Krishna, just like, you know, young boys, they will also play in the dirt with toy animals. Just like when Krishna, just like, you know, young boys, they will also play in the dirt with toy animals. You know, they have little plastic animals and little plastic soldiers and plastic cars. And if you watch what they do with them, just like Radhanath, these very strange combinations, you know, Radhanath, a pile of seeds on a chair, a rope, they combine them in very strange ways and have fun. So, for instance, when Lord Krishna came as Kurma, you see, now young boys, a young boy, he always likes to have these plastic dinosauriers, you know, or also a big turtle, you know. So Krishna just came, he just took that form. He doesn't have to play with a plastic toy. And in this way, pretend something that he is the big turtle. He just takes that form. He just comes as a big turtle, and then in that form, he arranges that a big mountain is put on his back, and a snake is wrapped around the mountain, and then there's demigods and demons pulling the snake, and in the meantime, he's feeling that this itching on his back is being satisfied. It also says in Bhagavatam, because the Mandara Parvat, this mountain, was being turned so much, it was spinning very fast. So, Lord Kurma, he had jewels, necklace, bracelets, these jewels. So, he was also taking the opportunity to polish them on the bottom of the mountain. You know? So, this is Krishna's psychology. He's a young boy. And when he comes to play. But his playing is so wonderful. It's manifest in CinemaScope, Technicolor, 3D, reality. And devotees can take part in it. Devotees take part in Krishna's pastimes. Krishna likes to play with his devotees. It's like also when Krishna came as Varaha, the boar incarnation. Then one demon was terrorizing the universe, Hiranyaksha, and the devotees, the demigods, they came before Lord Brahma, and they were begging, please, you are the grandfather of the universe, chief among the demigods. This demon is endangering all living entities, so you must do something. So then Lord Brahma, he was thinking, because it was a great problem, how to control this demon. He's so powerful. So he was deep in meditation, thinking. Now you know, Lord Brahma, he's a very exalted personality, very aristocratic. Huh? All the demigods very much respect him. So he was sitting there deep in meditation, and then he felt something tickling in his nose. And all the demigods were looking. And then some little thing came out of his nose. Looked like an insect. And they were all looking, what is it? And then it began to grow. And then they saw it was a little boar. Then it was growing more and more and more, and filling the whole sky. And then they realized, when they didn't know what was going on at first, but because they know Krishna's nature, when they saw that it was a boar that came out of Brahma's nose and now was growing, oh, there's only one person who can do this. That's Krishna. This is another one of Krishna's Leela avatars. Krishna has come to play again. So, and of course, part of the play is that he kills the demons. That's just part of it. Just like when little boys are playing, they do the same thing. They have their little toy soldiers. And they fall. But that's also playing. Sometimes people misunderstand. Like Sri Vishnupada once said, he gave a program in Yugoslavia and was telling how God comes to kill the demons. And then just after he said that, the whole hall emptied. Everyone got up and walked out because they didn't want to hear that God came to kill. Thought this was a great insult against God, because God is love. But Krishna's killing is liberating. It's also part of his play. He may kill demons, but then the demons go and they leave the cycle of birth and death and enter the spiritual realm. And sometimes even they're promoted to an eternal relationship with Krishna in his eternal pastime. Sometimes entering only Brahma Jyoti, but at least they're promoted out of the material world. So this is, Krishna's Leela is all auspicious for everyone, even the demons. So this is Krishna's nature. He likes to play. He's a young boy. That's why we say Govinda Adi Purusha, the original form of the Purusha. Purusha, Purushottama, Supreme Person. His original form is that of Govinda. We've all seen that beautiful picture of Gopal Krishna, Govinda, who is embracing the cow sitting on the rock with his flute in his hand. So beautiful picture. So, yes, that is the original form of God. He's a young, very beautiful, most beautiful young boy. And he's always thinking how to have fun. So, and Krishna wants to play with us, you see. Just like also in the material world, you see, when a young boy is very, if he's very active and very kind of like fearless, he likes to make friends, he goes out of his way, he likes to play with big groups of boys. So he likes to make new friends. If he's somewhere and he sees another boy his age he doesn't know, he comes and starts to talk to him. Yeah, because they're the same small height, everyone else is big. So they're immediately attracted to each other. There's another little person. And then they talk. And after, you see, you can always see with such young children like that, they meet. And after a few seconds, all the formality of introduction is finished, and immediately they're sharing some fantasy together. They're playing some fantastic game together. They're rolling around on the floor, doing this, doing that, as if they'd known each other their whole life. So this is also the nature of young boys. So Krishna is like that. He likes to make newer and newer friends. And so this material world is filled with all kinds of persons who are, of course, sleeping in ignorance, but they would also make very good playmates for Lord Krishna. So see, he's interested that they also come and enter his Leela. So therefore, he's bringing his Leela, his pastimes, in so many forms, so many varieties. Pastimes are there. So Krishna is coming periodically through the ages, displaying wonderful pastimes. And they're recorded in the Shastra. And this sound vibration, which is handed down from pure devotees who know Krishna, it is actually non-different from Krishna. So just by hearing from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, that can purify the consciousness so that one can enter these pastimes. Because these pastimes are, after all, eternal. They're eternal. They're manifest once in a while in this world, in this temporary world. But they're eternally manifest elsewhere. In the spiritual sky, they're also going from universe to universe with Krishna's eternal pastimes. And when we do that, then, yes, all the desires, all these idealistic desires in the heart for enjoyment, for happiness, etc., all these things, they become satisfied. So, that is the process. And that is why also we were yesterday, and we'll say it again, that is the most essential feature of our devotional service, is hearing. That is the, yes, that is the real thing. We have so many duties to do, but hearing must be the foundation. Hearing and chanting Krishna Katha must be the foundation of all of our duties. Then we will attain the proper success. Any questions? Yes. Well, the point is that, as Prabhupada explains, the soul's constitutional position is that he's a tiny spark, 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair in size. And the soul is always dependent. We are always dependent. So in the material world, to act, we depend on material nature. And similarly, if doing spiritual activities, you depend on the spiritual nature. So, we are Krishna. There's a name for Krishna, Svatantra. Svatantra, from the Sanskrit, we have a modern word. A word in English, you say autonomous. I think in German, you say autonom. So autonom. You can hear the similarity. Svatantra, autonom. So that's what Svatantra means. Krishna's autonomous. Huh? He is self-sufficient. Everyone else depends on him. So we depend on Krishna. So when we're not inclined to serve Krishna, then we must depend on his material energy in order to do our activities of sense gratification. We're desiring, but how am I lifting my arm? You see, how am I lifting my arm? We know from the Shastra that I am not lifting my arm. But I desire, and because the demigods are there controlling, they actually reside in expansion form in all the senses, including the mind of this body. They're tuned into our desire. They know exactly what we want. And if it's according to our karma, if our karma, the karmic record allows that you can lift your arm, now you're desiring to lift your arm. And then the karma computer, they check the karma computer. It's okay. Then the demigods, they, okay, press some knobs and the arm goes up. And because the consciousness is connected, our consciousness is, of course, pervading the body, and is the consciousness is covered also by ahankara, false ego. Therefore, we think I'm doing that. We think I'm lifting the arm. Just like, you know, when you sit in a car, and when you're driving a car, especially young, passionate people who like to drive cars very fast, they don't think of that the car is being propelled forward by a motor. They don't think of these mechanical factors. They actually think the car is me. See, and they think just by pressing the gas, I'm going faster, and they're just absorbed in this, doing this. And they forget about the whole mechanical arrangement upon which all of this is depending. And they just think, I'm the doer. I drove very fast. course, at any moment, the motor may break, some part of the car may break, and everything stops. So it's the same thing in this body. We are always dependent, although by false ego we think we're the doer. Oh, well, we're doing in that sense, we're desiring, because that's the active nature of the soul. But that doing is always dependent doing. If it's authorized, you can do. Yes, you can do. And then the power is supplied, everything is supplied, and then you're doing, and then just by this ahankara we take credit. We think, oh yes, I did very nicely. So also in the spiritual world, it's the same thing. But when I say spiritual world, I'm also including activities of devotional service in this world too. The power to do that is supplied by the spiritual nature. So, but there's a difference in that there's no check of karma in spiritual activities. Like in material activities, if the karma is okay, you can do. Just like everybody has the desire to live in a big house and have a big car and lots of money in the bank and private airplane and all this thing. If you ask, whenever that's why they have all these magazine articles about the rich people. You know, who's that princess in Monaco? Forgot her name. There's a couple sisters, princesses. And you always see them always, if you walk by the magazine, you always see one or the other's face on all the magazines. And because they're very wealthy and beautiful, and they go here and there and do what they want. And so people, everyone thinks, they read these magazines, oh, I wish I could do that. You see, I wish I also had all these facilities. So that desire is there, but the karmic computer has not allowed. See? Yes, these princesses, they may do. They may have this facility. They have the karma. But Johanna Putzfrau, she doesn't have the karma. She can just read about it and wish, but karma's not there. So she plays Lato Tato, hoping that someday she'll also get a million marks and then she can go to Monaco. But if the karma says no, then also the Lato doesn't result in wealth. So anyway, but in spiritual activities, that's not there. That check of karma is not there. If one, of course, now one has to be linked up properly to the spiritual energy by way of spiritual master. That's, spiritual master takes away the karma so that there's a clean connection. Because we do video work, we think in these terms now. There's a clean connection. Clean signal. There's a clean signal from the spiritual world to the devotee. Nothing obstructing it. No karma obstructing. By the via media of the spiritual master. It's only because you have a spiritual, if you have a spiritual master, that is there. Then it's just a question of desire. If you desire purely, strongly, to serve Krishna, then Krishna supplies. As you desire, Krishna supplies more and more. Of course, if the desire is not so pure, if there's motivation in there, mixed in there, then in this way, by doing great service, I will become glorified, I will be recognized. Well, Krishna, he loves his devotee, so he doesn't want his devotee to fall down. So he checks that. And then it doesn't come so freely. But that's also not according to karma. It's the actual devotional relationship. Krishna's taking care of his devotee. So Krishna sees in the devotee's heart certain impurities are there. So therefore devotee's life may be a little rough, even though he's still at the same time transcendentally situated, because he's got some lessons to learn. But there's no karma. So everything, as it's often stated, everything in both cases rests on desire. If you have a pure desire, then in devotional service, Krishna will supply everything. Yes? Allah. No, these are names of God. The Muslims, Allah, the Muslims, that is their name, that is the word they use to say God, simply God. Just like in, you say in German, Gott or God or whatever. It's not really a personal name. It's just signifying God is the greatest. Then they have other names, personal names for God. So Krishna, when we say Krishna, this is a personal name of God, and it's referring to Krishna being the reservoir of all pleasure. Because Krish means to attract, Na means pleasure. So Krishna attracts us by the fact that he is the unlimited reservoir of all happiness. So when you chant Hare Krishna, it's very sweet. By chanting Hare Krishna, one develops love of God. So all names of God are in their own way potent, spiritual, and lift us up. So we say you can chant any name of God, doesn't matter. But on the other side, because finally these names in themselves are specific, it's not just ultimately a big mishmash, and it doesn't, you know, there's absolutely no difference between the names. No, the names are also specific. So the name Krishna is addressing Krishna, the supreme lover of the soul. So by chanting Krishna's name, one develops a very intimate, loving relationship with God. It's just like, you know, to give a mundane example, there may be a powerful man, like a powerful government man, minister, and many people fear him, many people respect him. So according to their relationship, they address him in different ways. They may, his associates will address him as Herr Kollege or something. Those who are on the equal level, they'll address him like that. Those underneath him will address him in another way. So there's so many respected titles he may have. But when he goes home, you see, maybe his wife calls him Poopsie. So that's a more intimate name. So in the same way, God is known as Allah, Jehovah. These are all signifying His greatness. But when you say Krishna, you're addressing Krishna very intimately. Now this is why the movement of chanting Hare Krishna, which was started by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is so merciful. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is called the most merciful incarnation, because He is distributing Krishna's name, this intimate name of Krishna, to everyone. Everyone has the opportunity to address Krishna in these most intimate, loving terms. And if they chant that name purely, they will actually, by Lord Chaitanya's grace, develop pure love of Krishna. So this is such a wonderful, special opportunity. So on the one side, we tell people, yes, God has many names, you can chant any name you like. Allah, Jehovah, Rama, Govinda, Krishna. But on the other side, we say, but if you're not too much attached to some other name of God, then you should chant Krishna. If you're attached to another, that's all right. Lord Chaitanya also, he taught like that. Some of his followers, they were attached to Lord Ramchandra, so he respected that they're very much devoted to some particular form of the Lord. But he was himself and his closest associates, of course, interested in Krishna. Okay. Oh, yeah? Oh. Yes. I recommend that myself. I find that's the best way to read, if you read out loud. Of course, you don't always have the chance to do that, but if you can, it's very, very purifying to actually hear what you're reading. Very good to control the mind. Because the mind, being a rascal, it knows when, as soon as we open this book, the mind knows, uh-oh. And here it comes. So then, if it has the chance, just if you're just moving your eyes on the words and trying to read in this way, then in the mind, it takes every opportunity to just wander off, so that you probably all had the experience of, reading, you turn a few pages, and then you stop, and then you wonder what you just read. Then you look back and it all looks like you wonder, did I read this? And you may go over one paragraph 5 times just trying to absorb it. And that's because the mind is such a rascal. The mind doesn't want to, because the mind is like a bad child, very much attached to just doing stupid things. And just like a bad child when the teacher comes in, bad child in school, when the teacher comes in, then the child, whenever he has a chance, whenever the teacher looks away, then the child is named. Or throwing something at someone else, or making some sound. If we read out loud, then it's like the teacher is standing up with a stick in his hand looking right at the bad child. And the bad child has to be very quiet. Okay,